Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from BreezeLine. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at BreezeLine.com.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Send it up into the sky. We're calling it Pods and Recollection. Come on, little podcast, spread your wings and fly.
Ben, you had a question for us.
Yes, my question, first of all, hi, how are you, Rob? How are you, Alan? Lovely to see both of you.
So good to see you again.
Really good to see you.
And then my question was, what is this? What happens here is my question, kind of.
Yeah. So yeah, that's hard. It's hard to articulate, really.
Uh-huh.
Here's what's great. We have a Harvard I have a Harvard educated partner.
Okay.
So whenever a question is above my intellect, I just turn to the smart guy. Alan, what are we doing here? What is this?
I mean, my degree was in biology. It bears no relevance to anything I've done in my life the last 20 years. It truly has no.
That's crazy. You have a biology major? That was what you. That's what you graduated with?
That's right. You can tell my work, right? Right.
Yeah, of course.
This is the same stuff. Well, the answer is we start talking about an episode of Parks and Rec, and then we inevitably derail to something totally unrelated, and then shoot with our friends.
Perfect.
So I think you could do that. You think you could do that?
Yeah, this sounds fantastic, actually. Yeah.
I'm loving the tapestry behind you, by
this
the way.
This is what you guys are seeing right now. You're seeing a little bit behind the music. This is where I record all my voiceover for my animated movies and shows.
Wow.
So I built this in my little in my closet, and so this is supposed to be the soundproofness behind me. There's a carpet here.
That's what I
talk into.
Is this where Sonic was recorded?
Sonic is too they wouldn't let me do the Sonic here, but DuckTales and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie and all the ADR for anything during COVID happened here.
Sonic, they come in and put in a higher quality blanket behind
you. Yeah, yeah. I have to go to Jim Carrey's house for Sonic.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, man. I feel like I'm looking at Abbey Road. I think I'm looking at where the real magic happens.
I mean, you kind of, I think, Rob, you know that this is exactly like Abbey Road.
Yes.
I would say there's as much audio history in that room.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's certainly more relevant at this point.
Should we talk about the episode, Rob? Do you want to do a welcome at all?
Yeah,
who knows?
Listen,
who knows?
Listen, welcome everybody. We're already getting down here. Today is a big day. We have Ben Schwartz with us, the legendary John Ralphio. I mean,
wow.
Need I say more? I know I don't have to. We have a great episode we're talking about today. It's called Woman of the Year, and it was episode 17 of season 2, which aired on March 4th, 2010. It was written by Norm Hiscock and directed by Jason Wolanier. Right?
That's right. Canadian legend, Norm Hiscock. Kids in the Hall.
He also Saturday Night Live and King of the Hill, and he worked with Greg on a billion. He's helped showrun the show I'm currently on called Space Force with Greg this year. He came on.
Oh, wow.
That's right.
He's amazing.
He's one of my favorites, man. He's one of my favorites. Huge story guy. Very sweet guy, too. He's got that
Nicest person in the world. And Jason Wallner is an incredible director. This is a good episode.
Natalie Attire, Jason Wallner, directed the Borat sequel. He wears a suit on set because he looks so young that people think he's a production assistant. So he told me very early on when I started directing, I was like, what do you do? He's like, well, I like to wear a suit because people think I'm too young to direct. So I wear a suit to set. So I was like, okay, that's good advice.
Is that where you got the suit idea, Alan? Really?
No. No, I was wearing that kind of before. So you know what? Jason doesn't get total credit for that. But yeah, that's when I used to wear what Poehler would call soft blazers all the time.
Yeah, that's a good phrase for it. A soft blazer. A kind jacket.
Yes. It's just like it's not too structured. Well, let me go through the episode synopsis and then we could chat freely.
I'm because curious otherwise to know people if how much of this you remember, so get ready.
Well, I didn't know what this was, Rob. And I should have contacted either of you. So when I saw what the title of the episode was, I was like, oh, I haven't seen these episodes since they've aired.
This is great. Perfect.
I watched this one literally 10 minutes ago, finished it 10 minutes ago, so I know exactly what it's about.
Oh, it's very fresh.
But could never in 100 years have told you what it was until then. But now everything is like, I remember everything.
Well, there we go. So here's the synopsis. Very exciting. Most exciting part of the show. The Parks Department receives a letter from the Indiana Organization Women. Much to Leslie's horror, the award she's been waiting for has gone to Ron in recognition of town projects Leslie primarily developed. Ron privately acknowledges the award as a ridiculous mistake. However, he uses the opportunity to mess with Leslie before recommending her as the award recipient later. It's revealed that a man was strategically chosen for the first time for marketing purposes. Frustrated with the politics of the awards, Ron publicly presents the award to Leslie, who tries to present it instead to Ron, who proceeds to present it back to Leslie. The next day's newspaper proclaims Ron the winner, with Leslie and Ron later deciding that the award is meaningless anyway. The plaque is thrown into a wastebasket, where Leslie later secretly retrieves it. In a subplot, I love this phrase, in a subplot, that we don't use that often. In a subplot, a B story, Tom drops off a temporary liquor license renewal at the Snake Hole Lounge nightclub, where the owner Freddie tells him they're seeking investors who can buy a share for $10,000. Tom reveals part ownership in a nightclub is a longtime dream of his and seeks partnership from his fast-talking friend, the legend, Jean Ralphio, played by Ben Schwartz, who contributes, but Tom is still in need of one more $1,000 to seal the deal. Tom seeks further help from his coworkers. Donna expresses an interest, but decides against it when she meets Jean Ralphio and hates his guts. Meanwhile, when Andy's bandmate Burley tells Andy he can no longer live with him, April helps Andy look for an apartment. They find one near a house, prompting a smitten April to note that they can carpool to work together. But when Andy learns Tom needs $1,000, he forgoes the apartment to give Tom the money. In the episode's final scene, Tom is shown enjoying his nightclub part ownership until he learns Donna has bought 3 shares herself. That's the tag. We even did the tag in the synopsis.
Jesus.
That's the episode. The episode's over now. The podcast episode's over now.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in. See you next week. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we all did.
Parks and Recollection is produced.
Rob, I don't know if you were in the show yet for this one, were you?
No, and that's what's been really fun for me, actually, is to do these episodes leading up to my appearance in Parks and Rec, and because I'm really just an audience member. I mean, I have no dog in the fight. I wasn't there, didn't know anything about it. So I get to comment on the episodes as a fan, and it's super, super fun. And also watching these episodes, I get to go, oh, that's where that had its, you know, origin.
Right.
I wanted to ask Ben while we have him.
Oh, yeah, because I'm heading out in like 2 minutes.
After the synopsis, we've got about 1 minute left in the episode. I don't know. I want to talk to you about like how, what you were doing when you started doing this character.
I'll put it today. What were you thinking?
Yeah. What was, because I know the lines were crazy. Like Harris Whittles wrote a lot of the lines. I remember we were writing all this shit kind of as a room, but we were excited about casting you. We always wanted to cast you. When you came to set, like reading the lines, like what was going through your mind building this character?
I'll tell you, the way that I got it was that I had a meeting with Katie Dippold. Oh no, I had these shorts that I did for ESPN where I interviewed athletes a long time ago, and Mike Schur saw it, and then he had a meeting with me, Harris Whittles, and Katie Dippold when Katie was still on the staff, and he said, "Hey," and they were interviewing me about the role of Amy's police boyfriend. Do you remember that role?
Yes, and yes. So, Officer Dave.
Yes, Officer Dave. And so we did it. We had a good time. They're like, you're just too young for this. But I remember what Mike said. He goes, think about the show like The Simpsons. You know, there's all these different characters that, you know, are around the town and we'll get to meet. So hopefully someone will pop up. And then the behind the scenes part of this is that someone had emailed my agent being like, hey, we have this role for Ben if he's interested in, and nobody ever told me. And then the assistant at the desk passed on the role for me without even telling me that it came through, which is like the scariest thing in the world, because this role ended up being such a huge deal for me. And then I didn't even know about it. And then Katie Dippold emailed me. She's like, oh, I'm so bummed you're not joining us. I was like, what are you talking about? Joining you for what? She goes, Parks, we just found out you passed. I go, what are you, crazy? Whatever it is, I'll do it. Nobody ever told me. And so they said, oh, okay. And then I emailed, and I guess someone was like subbing in at a desk for a day and made a mistake somehow. And then I literally told Katie, I was like, I don't even care what it is, do whatever it is. Whatever it is, I'll do it, of course. And she's like, okay, great. And so then I went in, and the first time I kind of read it in front of anybody was when I did that first scene, the interview with me and Ron Swanson. And I did it once in rehearsal, and then Mike Schur came up to me in my ear and says, you'll be coming back. And then he like ran up to the writer's room to write the next episode. And it was the best feeling in the world.
A legend was born. But no, I remember that story distinctly, and it drove me wild to
Wait,
think
you
about
remember,
it.
Do you know that someone passed on me?
Yes, because we later talked about it, and because you became such a huge part of the show, and we were saying, oh my God, this is why actors get so paranoid about stuff, because if we didn't happen to know you, because you know, obviously you knew Katie and Harris, and like I think we had met already, and you know, you were around UCB, we all were friendly with you, but if we hadn't known you and were on an email text basis with you, etc., like you would never have known. We straight offered you the part.
Dude, I would love to. So I've never heard your side of the story at all. But what was said, like, I didn't know anything. All I know is when Katie emailed me, I would love to find out. And I've still told the story maybe once in my life because I'm afraid of embarrassing whoever did it.
Yeah.
Murder whoever did it.
Well, it all worked out well, but we were
what happened
like,
on your side? You guys offered me the role. You guys knew you were going out to me, and then what did you hear
yes.
back?
Yes. We offered you the role. This was one of the two weirdest moments in Parks' history in casting, I think, was offering you the role and then knowing again that you were excited about the role, you'd already met with us, you were friendly with us. And
yeah, I told Mike I'd do whatever he wants.
Exactly. And then it's like, I remember, I don't know if it was Mike or somebody, but someone came back to the room and was like, yeah, Ben Schwartz passed on this role. And we were like, what? we couldn't, like, it's not like we couldn't believe it because like, oh, maybe he has another show or something. But we all were like, we should reach out to him and just see what's going on because it's possible. We just wanted to preserve the scintilla of a hope that there was a miscommunication. And that's what it was. And it was like, you appeared in how many episodes? 20, 30, 40, yeah. Who knows how many episodes?
Isn't that
it was literally
crazy.
That email, right? It
that's
was like
Rob, yeah. Is that not the actor's nightmare? That's the nightmare.
My blood is boiling. literally, my blood is boiling right now.
And by the way, I said that was one of the two weirdest moments in casting history. The second was when we straight offered Werner Herzog to play a part in Parks, and he immediately accepted. So that was the two. Those were the two.
What?
The two ends of the spectrum. That's right. Mike walking back in the room and said, "Werner Herzog's in." We're like, "What?" He said, we offered to him almost as a joke because we knew he would pass. He said yes. Schwartz said no originally.
I can't believe someone passed on my behalf without telling me I was offered the role. It was such an insane thing that I never really talked about it because I was like, wait, this can't happen. I assumed that it was the assistant that was covering the desk that said something, I don't know what. And by the way, I don't think I was attached to a show. And even if I was, it was a guest star, so I could have done it. So yeah. It was all very, it made me very sad. And then I hate confrontation, so I didn't do anything about it.
Oh my God.
Your career ended up being great, so it didn't matter.
It didn't matter.
But still,
thank God it happened.
It didn't matter. But
you're right. If I didn't know you guys, I never would have gotten the email being like, are you sure? I'm like, are you sure about what? You passed.
Yeah,
like,
that's
passed
right.
on what? I don't even, what are you talking about? Of course, whatever it is, I'm in. And she's like, oh, great. And that was it. And then I came to work like 2 days later.
I mean, we're all lucky that it happened because it was, to me, it was a unique matching of actor to character that is almost irreproducible.
But I have a question
right?
for you guys because I wasn't there for the cooking up of all of it. Like how, and you can see it in these two episodes you've been in now so far. The first one, the hair is not there yet. the hair has not arrived. It will be arriving. And when we talked about the first episode, which Katie wrote, when we had Katie on the show and she was great, you hadn't discovered the John Ralphio signature singing of dialogue yet. That makes its appearance in this episode and made me super happy because I
well
felt
done, Rob.
John, he has arrived.
Can I tell you also, the first time I met Rob was, it was on set, and obviously, I'm sure everybody says something, come on, but like, I've seen Rob my entire life. Rob is a part of cinema history. When, if you're someone my age, you've watched Rob literally your whole life growing up, and he's always like, he's always an incredible actor, but also the, you know, handsome and lovely and amazing. And so
Thank you. I met
him, and there's a little bit of nerves when you meet someone like that, because when you see them, you see the version of them from movies instead of like them as a human. And Rob, there's no way you remember, but it was a couple episodes in from whatever, and I met him, and I go, "Hey, man, I'm such a big fan." He goes, "Oh my God, my kids love you." And I was like,
"Wow!"
I said, "Really?" He goes, "They, your character on the show is one of their favorites. They go crazy," and it made me, it, like, any anxiety I had kind of went away, because I feel like I already got approval from someone in that family. So like, and it was very relaxing, and it gave me confidence to like go even crazier. Cause like, if you watch John Ralphio at the beginning, he's kind of like douchey, and then slowly he like slowly becomes a cartoon character. So it's like me trying out riskier things and crazier things, and Mike being like, "Sure. Yeah. Keep going. Yeah. Okay." So it was like, but that sing-songy part, Rob, was in that episode, it said the dialogue, and then in brackets, it said sing-songy. So there's
it
does, no like,
so it did say it in the writing. That's so interesting.
It just says sing-songy, and then I kind of like decided what that meant. And then it went well, and then all of a sudden, every script had a sing-songy in it.
Yeah, we took that ball and ran with it.
This one's "I'm flush with cash,"
which is the one, if I ever go to bars, that's the one I hear more than
is
anything.
Is that the one?
Oh, man.
"Flush with cash," and "I got run over by Lexus," I hear a lot.
"Got run over by Lexus."
"Got run
that's
over
got
by
a
Lexus.
Real catch to it.
Technically, I'm homeless. Technically, I'm homeless is a big one.
Wait,
so when you guys wrote the character, this is amazing for me, because I've never asked it. I never learned anything about my character. What was the, how did it even form? And then how deep into it were you guys like, "Oh, Ben should play that"?
There were a couple things. First
of
all,
this is exciting for me, Alan. I never got to, I don't hear any of this.
I don't think we've ever talked about it. It all is sort of building on itself, right? So it's like at the beginning, it was like, well, it would be nice for Tom to have like a friend, right? Like literally to start like, okay, he brings this guy in that interview episode where Ron is interviewing for assistants. He ends up hiring April. But having written that scene, so basically Katie was saying, we wrote a scene for this John Ralphio character, the character that would be known as John Ralphio. It was a side pod with Katie Dippold and Harris Whittles, who were friends of yours, and you know, it was a kind of this like they went off and started writing this one scene, and obviously came back to the room after that. But I do believe, and Katie puts it this way, Harris was like, "Hold on a second," took over the keyboard, started typing words, and she said, like, "The Beautiful Mind" music played. And it was like, he was like, "Just let me," like, it was as if he was possessed by the spirit of this character, John Ralphio, and started writing all of this nonsense, which, you know, Harris is so good. You know, he was so good at writing just really sort of fucking whimsical, you know, like fun, funny jokes, just pure comedy. And the other aspect from the sort of the story structure, character, world-building side was one thing that we've talked about, which is you have Tom, who's this kind of silly character, and like in a lot of ways, he's very selfish and very superficial. But what if, as in Frasier, you know, in Frasier, he's kind of like, you know, urbane and a little bit effete, and he has a brother who's more so. He has Niles. So what if Tom had a Niles who was more selfish and more superficial and more of an idiot than Tom? You might like Tom by comparison. So we basically like put all those ingredients into the blender. And then, like you were saying, you can see in these early episodes, already funny, right? Those lines are funny. You're doing a great job. But then almost like a Pokemon evolving, like a Pikachu evolving into a Raichu. You'll see later episodes of John Ralphio. By the end, you're wearing like fluorescent pink. You're wearing two ankle bracelets. Your hair is 6 feet tall. It's so this was the beginning, but those were kind of the ingredients, right?
I love hearing that. There was a beat later on when we were really going for it where Mike Schur said, "Hey, I think you should just pop up. You should never enter a room. You should just pop up out of nowhere." And yeah. I'm sure there's a scene with Rob and Nick where I literally just pop up from behind in between both of you guys. It's later on.
Yep.
And I remember just like this sitting, and then they'd say, I'd wait for you guys to say your lines, and I'd literally just pop up. And then in the real human version, it would have to be that neither Rob nor Nick looked but like down for like that whole 30 seconds. I was just waiting for the perfect time to pop up and say something.
That's the stuff that we've discovered in going through the show, because I just love that no one did that reality check on that. Like that Mike's into, you know, pop up. And nobody, wait a minute. So boy, if he pops up, what are we saying? We're saying what? He was sitting here and they didn't see him. And well, that wouldn't
be real.
It's like, just be funny.
We started really, you know, look, the Saperstein family, everyone involved with John Rialfio, Mona Lisa, and of course, Henry Winkler as well. Like we kind of were like, you know what? We're real enough with a lot of the show. This stuff is going to be funny. This one is just going to be funny. And we also like season one, Greg Daniels always come in and be like, you know, in The Office, it's like we always do small, real, relatable comedy, right? Just grounded, like really great. And then later on seasons where literally people are appearing out of nowhere, we'd be like, remember, small, real, relatable. This is a documentary about a small town government in Midwestern Indiana, right? This is like this. And then it was like, yeah, something really wild happening.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places. Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
You know, I'm obsessed with hair, men's hair.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm very obsessed with men's hair.
Really?
Oh, yes. I could do a podcast about that.
Who's your top person? Who's your person? Like, this is, if I could have anybody's hair, it would be this human being.
Boy.
Yeah, it might take some time.
Well, you know what? I don't mean to be a dick, but really the way it works is I'm more worried about hair that I don't want.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah.
It's juicier.
Yeah. And I look at people who, like, I'm going to go, you're losing your hair, and you're in the business.
Rob was just like, fix it, man. You're on camera. Get them plugs.
I remember when I came to L.A. for the first time. So when I was in New York, I would get, you know, like, shitty haircuts. Then when I came to L.A., I didn't have someone to cut my hair. There wasn't anybody to cut my hair because I didn't know anybody in L.A. yet. And I was auditioning, and I got a role for a Mitch Hurwitz pilot. Mitch Hurwitz's pilot after Arrested. And it was me, Richard Dreyfuss, and Mary Steenburgen, Jason Biggs, and it was going to be this great thing. And I go, I am so sorry my hair looks like this. I will get it cut the second we film. And he goes, oh, no, you will not. And I go, I'm sorry. He goes, you will not cut that hair. And I said, oh. He goes, that's like, it's a great character trait for your thing. So I said, okay. And then I started noticing, only when I came to LA and had a lot of hair, that men would come up to me and be like, whoa, man, look at that, dude. That's incredible. And like, men would be so interested in the hair. It's a big thing in LA, I guess, hair. In New York, nobody cared.
Because you're all wearing berets and pork pie hat.
Oh, that's true. We're all like holding baguettes and wearing braids.
Exactly there. Right. But no, but your hair, but I could, that you answered my question, because my thing was like, how does he work other than as crazy John Ralphio if his hair is 17 feet tall? It's your real hair.
It is my real hair. It's never not my hair. And they like made it bigger. The second we realized that they liked it being big, then anytime I went in, we were like, let's do something insane with it. So oftentimes when I did this show, I was doing a different show at the same time. It was like either Undercovers or House of Lies. Mm-hmm. And if I knew I was filming this, I just would like not cut my hair for as long as I could before filming. And then afterwards, I let the other show cut it. But it became like a fun thing where like the hair team, which was amazing, I was like, do whatever you want. And they would just go crazy. So each one would be like a different style. It was great.
I remember it was always disappointing when he had to shoot another show right before. So it's like, it's not that long today.
We
can only do so much. It's like J.J. Abrams needed him today.
He needed to cut it.
When does Mona Lisa make her first appearance?
That's not for a while, right?
Yeah, I think it was just me for a while. And then I don't know where the idea came with what happens if John... I mean, the idea that already it's like... what you're saying, like Tom has someone that's, you know, a little bit crazier than he is. Like, when did the idea in the writing room be like, but what if this person had a family?
Yes, that's Greg Levine is saying season five. episode 16. Yeah, that's that is deep into the show.
That's deep
that's
in.
Beyond the point where like this needs any resemblance to reality. We're like, yeah, fuck it.
Hi, Greg.
Guys, I have to tell you, as I've been prepping these episodes with Schulte, I've been going through old scripts and old files on my computer, and I thought it'd be so fun to go through the script, the shooting draft of the script, to see what was intended, what was written, and then what Ben came up with on set. And so there's this one moment, it's around 5 minutes into the episode. It's when John Ralphio arrives at the Parks Department. Tom says, hey. And in the episode, as it airs, John Ralphio's line is, Big T, what it do, nephew? Sorry, Ben, I'm not as good as you. In the script, John Ralphio calls Tom Teabag, which is great. And then it says they do a hip-hop handshake hug, which is so funny to me that the hip-hop handshake hug action line is what turned into that amazing just brushing each other's shoulders moment between Tom and John Ralphio.
Yeah, and this is an example of when you have funny actors, and of course, we're talking about Aziz and Ben Schwartz, two of the funniest guys in the world. Like,
ooh,
you have it. That sort of ability to just let them go and let them improv. And this was, you know, in the run of the show, we had loosened up to that point where people would riff and totally make up different nicknames. And so, yeah, Teabag is fine, but then it was more fun for him to say, Big T, what to do, nephew? And this is kind of the beginning of him running his mouth and just being a motor mouth and just saying too many lines and fitting stuff in and rhyming and all that stuff, singing. And when you allow your actors to get that freedom on stage, it really just improves the show.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you made that really sweet birthday video for my son? I had you...
Oh
yeah, I had you make a like I said. They love John Ralphio. They're so excited that we're talking again today. They're grown men now, but like the single best thing I could have gotten them, I did, and that was I filmed me on the set going, "Hey, John Owen, it's your dad, and this is a birthday video. I just want to say how much I love you." And I went on for like 30 seconds, and then sure enough, boing from below the frame. John Ralphio.
Was I dressed as? I was probably dressed as John Ralphio too.
Yeah, no, it was. We were doing.
I do remember doing that.
It was the first episode that Mona Lisa was in, which she also, I think, boings into the frame as well.
I hope so. I mean, that's a perfect phrase for what we do into the frame. We straight up boing into the frame.
Boing. And then, of course, you get the amazing opportunity to have Henry Winkler as your father, and I mean,
it's the best.
Isn't it the best?
Oh, it's the coolest thing in the world. And also, it's like, I remember I went there. First of all, it's the Fonz, man.
The Fonz.
It's like, it's crazy. It's the Fonz. I remember telling my parents like flipped out. And so I went to set. I met him and I had back pain. And I was like, yeah, I hurt my back. And he's like, where does it hurt? And he's like, here. And he like cracked my back and made it feel better. And I was like, are you kidding me? Just like the jukebox, how he like hits the jukebox.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He basically did that to you.
Yeah.
He jukeboxed your back.
Yeah.
He jukeboxed your back.
It was incredible. And I remember being, and then we were, there's a great, him and I became like friends and I love him still. We talk still. And I remember we were walking through Radford and a person came up to him and goes, I'm so sorry, Henry. I hate to interrupt you. Nicest guy in the world, by the way. He is truly the nicest person in the world. He goes, I'm so sorry, Henry, but I came to one of your Happy Day shows. It was this season, and it meant, and he goes, and you talked to me that day, and he goes, stop, I remember, you were great, we had a conversation about, and he remembered it, and the guy almost like cried. He's like, really? He's like, yes, I hope your family's doing well. And like this, he gave this guy such an incredible experience, and he was like so happy and thankful, and but he was the best. And for me to improvise around him, because Parks let me really kind of go nuts, was very exciting, because he wasn't quite as used to people going way off script like that. And he found it very exciting, and like he didn't quite know. It was like very, very, very fun.
He was like a little kid.
He was the best.
Because I got to do a lot of work with the three of you, I'm remembering. And this is episodes way in advance.
Yeah.
But he is the nice, he without a doubt might be the nicest man in show business.
He truly is. There's a scene where it was you and Rashida and me and him, and I was, we were like dressed in the same pajamas. I remember that really well.
Yeah, there's a notion, there's a not so subtle notion that you guys might sleep in the same bed.
They're, absolutely. And I'm downloading pornography or something like that by mistake. Or
that's exactly the scene.
Rob, can I ask you a question? Am I allowed to do that on this podcast? You remember how I asked what this podcast is? Is this part of the podcast?
Yeah, it's all part of the podcast.
Well, you came from something like West Wing where you had to be word perfect, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, you can't say, and tell me if this is wrong because this is just lore from talking to Schiff, but you can't say I'm. If it's I am, you have to say I am, correct?
Absolutely. If you say ah and it's then you're going again.
Really?
Yep.
Like, do they stop halfway through the line and say, no, stop? Or they wait till the scene's
done? No, they wait till the scene is done, and then someone comes up with everything circled in ink that you said wrong.
This would be...
They have someone whose sole job is to do that.
I mean, it's making me anxious even talking to you about it, because then I would just be worrying about memorizing the words as opposed to what I'm saying. But okay, so my question, I have a bunch of questions about West Wing, but I'll ask you later. My question is, going from a show like that to a show like this, where there is leniency, we always do the words, but there is leniency afterwards, and there's leniency within the words. Is the experience, is one more exciting for you? Is one like, one fit you better? What is your experience going from one to the other? Because those are pretty big extremes.
Yeah, and that's the fun of it, and that's what you always are trying to figure out, what satisfies you in your job, right? And for me, that's the satisfaction, is to be able to have both of those experiences, because they are so diametrically opposed, and to feel like you can be facile and do both. I remember talking to, I feel like it was Jason Bateman, and he was potentially going to do The Newsroom. And he asked me, he said, I heard Aaron Sorkin is like letter perfect. And by the way, Aaron had won the Academy Award that night. This is the after party. And I go, yeah, no, you have to do exactly as it's written. He goes, well, but what about, like, if you had your own take on it, or you felt like, I was like, nope. He goes, yeah, no, I understand. But what about if you felt like you had something of your own experience, or maybe it didn't fit in your mouth and you've wanted, I was like, nope. And he said, well, I don't know if I could do that. I go, look, you have to take pleasure in execution. Like, you have to get off on running the perfect route as a receiver.
Oh,
you
wow.
run that route, and the more succinct and perfect, you don't make your route up. You don't go out and get open. It's like, we're just playground. I'm going to go, and you go, yeah. That's not it. It's a button hook. It's a five-step drop. It's all timing plays. And you have to be one of those people that gets off on that, and who understands that there's a beauty in it. And then the other part of it is, it's one thing to have to be letter perfect for a hack, and it's another thing to be letter perfect to a genius.
Sorkin, by the way, has his fingerprints all over this episode, not just this podcast episode. Rashida is not in this episode, because she was filming
with
Social Network.
Aaron Sorkin.
With Sorkin, with Sorkin, the Sorkin Fincher joint. So that's why she's not in this one, which is wild to think about. Like,
crazy.
That was concurrent, man. That was concurrent.
What about movements, Rob? Were you allowed to move, or they told you exactly where to be for every single line? Like, could you have to sit?
There was none of that. He didn't, Aaron, and they're not that. It's like, so in this thing, I think you should walk up to the window when you say, there's none of that. That, and by the way, I don't want this to be interpreted that somehow Aaron and people who work like Aaron, he's not alone. David Mamet's the same way. Neil Simon was the same way.
Sure.
People who come from the theater traditionally are more like that. They love actors, and they want inspiration from actors, but the words are the words, and you are there to service the words. And so to come to Parks, where, you say, we always did the script. We didn't make this up. These are Alan Yang and all these amazing writers.
The scripts are amazing.
They were amazing. There's no need to improve them. Zero need to improve them.
Mm-hmm.
But we had the opportunity to do that. And that was celebrated. And for me, it just felt so freeing and just so much fun. I love doing both. But the other I can only do with people who are absolutely brilliant writers.
Right. And by the way, brilliant actors as well. That show obviously is, one of the best shows of all time, but it's like, if you don't have a Schiff, and all the people that you guys had were the best actors in the universe.
And we had people come in who were great actors, some of whom who've won Academy Awards, and just got steamrolled. by the West Wing experience. They just
makes
couldn't.
Me very anxious. They just makes for an incredible product. Makes for an incredible product and a great show. So
thank you.
Anyway, Parks and Rec. Sorry. So I always wanted to know. I never got to talk to Rob about West Wing, so it's very exciting.
No, I like that, man.
But Ben, you know that that Mike Schur will tell you that Parks and Rec is the comedy version of the West Wing. Like, if the drama takes place in the West Wing, then where would the comedy take place? Well, in the Parks and Rec department.
Yes, I remember hearing that.
Yeah.
They're sort of cousins in that way.
Right. Instead of the nuclear codes or whatever, it's like there's a possum on a golf course.
That's right.
Like,
right.
Exactly.
So it's like that's what you do it.
I do remember when we were doing Parks, one of the biggest things I would tell people is that it's like we have like a Hall of Fame writing staff. And I oftentimes, just because I write as well, it's like you think about the staffs that you have. For Parks, it's like Alan and Harris and Norm and Dippold and Chelsea Peretti. And it's like there's so many incredible human beings that were on the staff that it's like it's crazy. It's like an all-star team. It's like the, you know, it's like the men's Olympic team from 92, Alan.
No Chris Middleton, but yeah. I look back and it's the same thing, right? I look back, it's like, oh my God, like, look, Norm is running Space Force and Norm was on this show, right? Like you were saying, Dan Gore was on the show. Like all these people who became showrunners, became huge movie writers, they're all here. And I think this episode is like, you know, you watch it back and it just totally holds up story-wise. Like,
it's so good.
There's a thing we were talking about, like, you know, the joke around comedy writers, like, oh, are you a joke person or a story person? And Norm was always a story person in the room because, like, he just had an impeccable sense of, and this is not trivial. It's hard to do. To have that compass of when a story works and to figure out if the characters are behaving in character and if the ending is satisfying and all that stuff. And that this episode's really like that. Because in that talking head that starts this episode with Ron saying, you know, like, he immediately says, I don't care about this award. Like, I know I won this and it's dumb. And, like, I'm just going to let her kind of dangle in the wind because right. Leslie cares about awards too much. That's the whole episode.
Yeah,
so you get that
right.
In minute two and you understand what's happening and you're not mad at either party. You understand that Leslie's being silly and you understand that Ron loves her ultimately and is going to do the right thing. And that sets up all the comedy. And then I was admiring the twists and turns, too.
Let me ask you a question because you were talking about the first thing that I wrote in my notes, because it's very, very, it's a very specific thing to immediately reveal to let the audience in on what the plan is. There are a lot of versions where you don't until the end, then you're like, oh my God, aww. Or maybe you do it in the middle, so you kind of have the best of both worlds, maybe. But that you guys forfeited that reveal was clearly specific. And my guess was we're just worried that unless the audience knows immediately why Ron's doing it, they're not going to like him. Was that the thinking?
Yes. There were, believe me, tons of arguments in the writer's room, but it was like, if you don't know the truth, Ron's just acting like a dick. And you're like, oh, I don't know why he's doing that. And because part of the comedy is him taking glee in it, right? Part of the comedy is him sort of smiling like a cat who ate a canary, right? That Nick Offerman smile. And so I think what ended up being, you know, why we were okay with it was there were a couple twists later on in the episode, right? The lady from the organization comes in, that's a twist. And then when he's up there at the podium, again, it's another twist because Ron just gives the award to Leslie, so that's another twist.
There's an incredible beat in that, and I think that the idea that you sell it early, you tell the audience what they're in on early, allows you for a beat of like when Swanson gets his photo taken, which as a character, he never would do that, and if you didn't warn the audience beforehand, they'd be like, what is going on?
Yes.
But instead, you're so excited, and he's like, I just watched this episode 10 minutes ago. He's like, and should I hold on to the pot? And it's like, you relish knowing that he is really a good guy and just messing with her in the time.
One thing I want to talk about is because the theme of this is awards, and the theme of this that is hammered and hammered and hammered some more is the words don't mean anything. And I love and I'm going to start using this. I'm not really into institutional gratification. That is fucking institutional gratification is the most brilliant thing I've ever heard of. I've never heard it used as a euphemism for ridiculous awards, but I'm going to start co-opting the phrase. But I do seem to remember many times that the show was not nominated, and I'll do you one better, that Amy Poehler never was nominated. Just not nominated. You're like, okay, so there's seven leading ladies in comedy better than Amy Poehler as Leslie Knope? Really?
Is that true?
Really?
Did she not get nominated?
Oh, yeah. There were years where she didn't get nominated.
Definitely years where she didn't even get nominated. She definitely never won, but absolutely.
That's insane. Yeah, is that
true? Yes. Do you guys remember this? At a certain point, I think Poehler and John Hamm hosted a party that was like Emmy losers party, because they would lose the Emmy every year. They, like, it was just like a fun, like, it was just like a fun thing. They were joking
did
about
the
it.
Show Hamm get Hamm ended nominated, winning at the end. Alan, or no?
The show only started getting nominated later on in the run. So I do remember going season, God, I want to say 3 or 4. It started getting nominated. Never won, but and never got nominated like frequently, right? It was never like a sweep, but the show started getting nominated later in the run.
I remember people would ask me now, because I feel like Netflix has made this thing such a bigger thing, but it's like now they're like, oh my God, how nervous were you like jumping into this? I was like, oh, when I got in there, nobody was watching the show.
Yeah,
like,
it was getting canceled every year. We literally got canceled every year. Yeah.
Every single year, the mic would be like, yeah, we're giving an ending where it could kind of get, you know, like we have no idea. Our rating, and so like, yes. it was never like, oh my goodness. Like, oh, even when we were rolling and it was like, you know, where people liked us, nobody was watching. Like every year, there's a chance if it wasn't going to get picked up. So I remember someone asked me that. I was like, oh, it was like I was a little nervous for the first one just to figure it out. And then like I'm surrounded by people I've seen. Like I was an intern for UCB for ASCAT. So I saw Amy every Sunday doing the garbage and recycling for UCB when I first met her. Aubrey was younger than me at UCB when we were coming up. Katie, I improvise with Katie still. She does my improv show anytime I do it at Largo. It's like, so I knew all these people, and Aziz I knew. So I knew all these people coming into it. So it just felt like hanging out with my friends. And then the more we did it, and as you guys kept going, the stories get a little bit more surreal in a way. And all of a sudden it feels like a UCB type experience too, where we're just like going there and having fun. And it was one of my favorite things in the universe to do, because it felt like I was just hanging out with my friends. And then even beyond that, it was like, yeah, you could take some risks too. Like, you'll have time to, we're going to do it as is, and then there'll be, I forget, fun run you guys would call it.
Yep.
It's like, all right, now do whatever you want. And then, like, it was just so much fun and so freeing, and it was so quick. Sometimes I would film, like, undercovers in the morning, come to you guys for, like, 2 hours, and then go back to undercovers. It was just like, you guys moved so quick, and you lit the room, so it wasn't, like, lighting the face like all my other shows that I do. So it was, like, so freeing, and, like, you were on camera on every take, so it wasn't, like, so nobody was saving shit for, like, another take. We were all just going for it, so everybody was 100%, everybody was going for it, and everybody was so locked into what they would do with their character in that moment that if you give them the right words, which you guys did every time, it was, like, kind of let us fly a little bit, and that show was... I remember there was a season where people were like, it was time for like renegotiations and stuff like that. Not for me. I was like a guest. Nothing. Nobody cared. I took literally whatever. There was whatever.
Your agent was like, take whatever they'll get. You're the same agent and passed on it. You know, take whatever. Take the minimum.
To be fair, it was never
can you make less?
It was my agent. It was an assistant that was whatever.
Agent. Yeah.
I love my agent. But I remember someone was like, it was like renegotiations. And I remember Offerman pulling someone aside and being like, we are so lucky. Do you know how lucky we are right now? We all like each other. We're making great. Like, it was such a beautiful speech that I got to be around when he was talking about it. And this is a gentleman who's been around for a long time and has had opportunities, but never like he was Ron Swanson, which is one of the best characters on television. And so I loved hearing that. He's like, we're just so lucky. We're so lucky that we get to be a part of this. This does not happen often. You know what I mean? But it was just the best. I had the best memories about that show.
Making something good with people you like, right? I mean, there's like that's the dream, man. That's the dream. It was like, and I remember, so even watching in this show, it's like we were talking about building characters. Like in this episode, we start to learn who Donna really is. Like we were just learning about John Ralphio. We're learning about Donna, because there's that scene you do with her. And it's, you know, it's so funny when she turns against you, but you know, and then so at the end of the episode, she reveals she's bought, you know, 3 shares or whatever. She's like, she's improbably wealthy, which I love. But do you remember shooting that scene? I mean, that's the flush with cash scene. But
I do remember shooting that scene. I remember I remember something that I started to do as we went on is like, I try to make the person next to me laugh. Like that was like, because I feel like when you could see someone like, and like if you get Offerman to laugh, he like laughs like a little baby, and yeah. his like mustache moves because he doesn't want to laugh, and so like air like seeps through his like tightly, his lips are so tight. But like I used to love trying to make people laugh, and so for Retta, I was like, we did that scene a couple times, and then I started playing with it and getting like way. And this is still like when John Ralphio was kind of more of like a douche guy and like slowly didn't, hasn't loosened up a little bit. But this is like the first scene where you start to see him like loosen. And I did it a couple different ways and I just kept trying to make her laugh, like adding more shit. And it was the best. That scene was so fun. And that was like when I started to be like, oh, we could play a little bit too. Because the first episode I did, it was just like, don't get fired. Just get through this and hopefully they'll let you do it again. Yeah. And then like they're like, oh, no, they like what you're doing. Keep doing it. Yeah.
I think there's a gag reel scene. I think you eventually make Retta laugh, right? I think we cut together. We do a gag reel at the rap party every year. And I think we may have cut together you improvising and adding on and on and on, and finally Retta breaking. I mean, Aziz would laugh too. By the way, Aziz would break all the time.
Yes, like it was fun to get Aziz to break.
Yeah,
it was the best. Making anybody laugh was just the best. You know what I mean? Yeah, and it's also so fun to be a guest star because I get to just come in and like zap a quick scene and leave. And I'm like fresh and can't wait. I'm so excited to be there. Right. You know what I mean? And you guys have been filming every day, you know, many hours a day. And I get in there being like, hi, how are you? How was everything? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's a very fun thing to just come in there, get a very silly scene in, and then leave. I remember anytime it was over, I'd be like, oh, I got to leave? Yeah. It's such like a bummer part.
That's also what people don't realize is like if you're number one on the call sheet, like on a show, like you're just shooting so much, right? You're shooting so much. And then as you go down, it's like sometimes it's nice to be a guest star. It's nice to be number six on the call sheet. And I mean, like, you know, shoot your days out and not be there all the time. But yeah, I was, you know, Amy was always putting in the hours on the show.
They both have their things. I mean, my version of John Ralphio was when I got to play Eddie Nero on Californication. And it was very similar. It was like a big swing character, like that character could do no wrong in the sense that there wasn't anything too big. The character was a cartoon. It was basically a cartoon. And I got to waltz in, crush, have fun, do whatever. Everybody was excited to see the character come back. And then I'm gone. And then Duchovny is there 16 hours a day for 17 years.
Yes. It's so fun. It's just a very lucky thing. And I'm always impressed, like whenever I'm in a show where I got heavy lifting or I'm one or two in the call sheet for a movie or something like that, then it's like I'm always impressed when an actor comes, because there's something else to it where it's hard to come in. I remember I did this movie with Billy Crystal, and I'm in there every day of the shoot, and we had an actress and she only had like 2 days or 3 days, and her first scene was in a live mall that was actually working, and it was a one shot up an escalator where we had this huge conversation. And I was like, it's so unfair because I've had 13 days to get loose and great, and I've worked every day and I'm in a rhythm now and I know my character inside and out and da da da. And this is her first day and she has to figure out what she's doing, and there's a live mall going on.
Yep.
Her name was Eloise and she crushed it. But I was like, you really have a respect for guest stars that can come in there and crush, because you got to remember, oftentimes it's just someone coming in, not knowing anybody, not really knowing what their character is, not knowing where they belong in the group of everybody is. But Parks picked the best guest. If you think about the guest stars on Parks, it's
insane.
Insane.
It's insane.
And even like Perd Hapley, who's one of my favorite actors in the entire show.
Yes.
Or like Mo Collins, who crushes. And then like it's just Paul Rudd. Like there's so many incredible people. And you guys put us all in a place, the writers and the actors and Mike put us in a place where you just felt comfortable immediately. So you didn't have to deal with the being nervous part. You were just ready to have fun immediately.
Yep.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Save big money at Menards. Keep your lawn looking its best with Menards' premium four-part fertilizer program. Each step is tailor-made for the health of your lawn. Get started this spring with a bag of crabgrass preventer with lawn food. Apply just once early in the spring to feed your lawn for over 2 months. Pick it up in our garden center today and check out Menards.com for more hot deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
We should do a town hall while we have Ben.
Let's do it.
Wait, is it a town hall or is it a town howl?
This will be a town hall, I think, because it's not an audio one. But, you know, we usually pick a location for the town hall. I think because Ben's here, let's do it at the Entertainment 720 headquarters.
Oh,
let's
for
do
sure.
it in that weird, wide-open white space that Roy Hibbert and Detlef Schrempf came to.
Oh, my God. Roy Hibbert's favorite day of his life, he tells me.
Yes.
And he has like two kids.
Oh man, talking to Roy about TV was you wouldn't believe the shows he's like, "You ever seen Squidbillies?" Like he was like an Adult Swim fan. It was very like that was Roy Hibbert, one of the Indiana
Pacers.
Wait,
what's the town hall? Oh, can I also say you know, every night you're talking about that gag reel, there's one time where I was just on set and sometimes Mike would do this where there was a town hall, like that's what it is, right? The town hall where everybody like speaks.
Yep. Yeah.
And so like they go, "What about you go up there and just start complaining about whatever," and I did it, and it was so I never made the episode. It was so fun, and then they kept the camera on me when I was leaving, so I kept trying to leave, but I picked the role that Chris Pratt was in, and I just the whole for like no joke like 120 seconds, which is so long, I tried to get around him and I would not leave, like I kept he kept was in my way, and I just tried to get him and I just made him laugh, and it was like my favorite thing, and I wish that it exists somewhere but never found it.
Wait, can we summon John Raffio?
Sure. What does he want to say?
He just wants to say, "Do you want to go to the town hall? I think you do."
Okay. Here we go. "Do you want to go to the town hall? I think you do." All right, we're doing great, guys.
Rob's going to have you recording drops all night.
All night. But that has to be, guys, that has to be a soundboard thing that we drop in as needed.
We now own that. We now own that, Schwartz. we now own that.
All right, so what is this town hall? What happens here?
Town hall is a question from a listener.
Oh, great.
Question from a listener. So we'll get right into it. The town hall question comes to us from Amber, and just as Amber from SoCal, so very broad range. Maybe she lives all over Southern California. The question is, was there ever an idea to create a bigger posse for Tom? John Raffio is great, but were there additional strange characters that got cut?
Mm.
Good question, Amber. I think the shortest answer is no, not really. I think what we ended up doing is expanding John Raffio's posse. So John Raffio, so Tom didn't get a posse. We're like, we like John Raffio, like we obviously we gave him Henry Winkler, his dad, and also Jenny Slate playing Mona Lisa. I would also like to pivot from that to just favorite Jean Raffio moments. One of my favorites, I don't know if you remember this one, Schwartz, but it's basically like you apply for a job at this accounting place, I think. And
oh, yeah.
You come in, you do the interview, and you get rejected all in one shot. It was one take, basically. So it's the tag of an episode. And it's something like you interview, it goes really poorly, and you're like, "Oh, I didn't get it. Yeah, makes sense. Bye." It's like, I don't know if you remember shooting that. It really made me laugh.
It was one of my favorite things because I exit the same way that I literally exited the same door I entered, which was, I thought, such a funny specific where like I enter, and by the way, I remember that scene because the woman is a guest star. She was great. She was right in front of me, and I literally I go through the entire office, and I don't think I ever stop talking, and I talk at the beginning, and everything's positive, and I talk so much that he clearly knows he's made a mistake. And I remember we had to get it, and the timing had to be perfect where I end my last sentence right before I get to the door. So like sometimes I would have to like rush like the other people to like move a little bit quicker and something. Yes. The timing of that was so difficult, but
yes.
I love a one shot also because I love how real it all feels.
I remember that. But that was a great moment.
And it was one of the first times ever that Mike Schur texted me and asked what I said in a scene years later. I don't know if you remember this, Al, but Mike called me or something, and he's like, "Hey, what do you say?" He thought I said like dime or something like that. I say diez, like she's a 10, but I say it in Spanish, and nobody understood what I was saying. And I was
right.
I said diez, and he's like, "What did you do? What happened there?" And I said diez 10. He goes like, "Oh yeah, of course." This also reminds me of the time where I've been doing the show a little bit, and people started to really like my character, and I would have done Parks every and Undercover's just ended, and House of Lies hadn't started yet. I hadn't gotten it yet, so there's a chance I could have jumped on the show. And then someone had asked him like, "What about like John Ralphio having a spinoff, or John Ralphio like?" And he goes, "I don't think anybody wants to see. I don't think anybody could take more of like 10 minutes." John Ralphio. And I was like, "He's right. He's like, what would happen? It would just be." Was there ever any conversation of making me a full-time member, or just it would make no sense?
I think it was what you said, which is like, we love it in the time we have allotted in the show,
yes.
But we're afraid. It's almost like too much power, yes. Too much power concentrated.
It's like a nuclear
weapon.
Too
much comedy power. Yeah, exactly, right? It has to be wisely used. Yeah. So, yeah, it's like a heavy dosage medication, like an upper or something.
It would just be much. The way he explained it was so funny. He's like, you couldn't take it. It's too much. You couldn't take it. If you had a spinoff, what are you going to follow? Like, what, how are you going to follow it? There's no straight man.
Yeah, exactly. You'd also like have to make it more normal. No one wants that.
No one wants that.
No. John Ralphio sad. John Ralphio like, oh, it's like, I'm not getting along with my brother or whatever.
There is one line I snuck in that some people noticed that when, Rob, you must have been there. We're leaving the Snake Hole Lounge. Everybody's hammered off of that drink, off of that.
Yeah, snake juice.
Yes. Oh, you definitely were in there because I remember in that scene, I had a scene with you, and then I think Amy directed it or Amy wrote it, and I asked her, I said, "Hey, can I make up a rhyme about Rob? Like, because he's the only person we didn't make up a rhyme about. What about if I just..." And she goes, "Yeah, definitely, go for it." I forget if it was Dean or Amy, but I remember someone gave me the go-ahead. So that's like the boss man thing, that rapper there. But at the very end of it, we're all in a car, smashing a car.
Yes.
And Jim is on the roof,
tied up
on the roof. And so the whole beat is like... And I forget if it was a mic pitch or I made it up or what happened, but we're there and everybody like, there's a big fart joke or some joke and everybody laughs. And the last thing I say right when it gets quiet is, "I'm so alone."
Yes. It's you saying that. It's just an earnest moment of John Ralphio. Yes. Just not a joke. Yes. Just saying, "I'm so alone." And then it ends.
Very few people caught it.
Yes.
And I don't know if it was written. I mean, Greg Levine would be able to know that somehow. I remember thinking that was so funny that in this moment, he's with everybody and everybody's drunk, and for the first time people like accepting him, and so he literally got so drunk that he says like, "I'm so alone." and nobody fucking cares.
I remember
thinking that would be so funny. I don't know if we did it once or twice, but
I remember when you did it, because it would make me laugh.
Nice.
I didn't laugh as Chris, but maybe Rob, the actor, laugh, and I'm almost certain you did it once, and it was an improv, and it made it in. It was fucking so odd.
I have very
and great.
Little video from Parks and Rec, very little, but I have a video of all of us in the car singing together, and I like pan around the whole thing, and it's like one of the coolest videos of all
time.
Didn't
we sing a song? Weren't we singing?
Yes, we did.
Yeah,
we sang
some song,
just,
some pop, some... You know, one of some song I'd never heard of. That he knew
it was the best. That show was, I mean, it's the best. You look back on some of the jobs. I mean, like, Rob, your career has been pretty remarkable. It's like, I'm sure you look back at some jobs and you're just like, fuck, man, we were
so lucky.
Yep.
One tangent that is interesting. So I was on the show for 4 seasons. By in the middle of the 4th season, we always shot on the same soundstage. Same stage at the Parks and Rec department. Never left, other than when we left, but we're there all the time. We shot the scene you're talking about in the car, in the basement. Apparently turns out there was an entire soundstage below our soundstage that I never knew existed. And while we were shooting there, they shot an entire season of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia below us. And I never knew.
I have shots of me dressed as John Ralphio at that bar, and I sent him to Glenn from Sonny, and he's like, "What the fuck is going on? How are you on our sets?" It was great.
Like, they were literally below us every day. We never saw them. I don't know what went on. And then, by the way, when we went, that set, I'm convinced they're going to have a class action lawsuit. one day for, I don't know what's going on. That was the like moldiest, gnarliest, most depressing set ever. And I was only on it for 8 hours with you doing that car scene. Woof.
Did we do that in a set?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a poor man's process, 100%.
Wow.
It was a set.
Wow.
Yep. This is great. I don't know what more anybody could ask for. I don't know what more I could ask for. This was fantastic. Will you come back for more fun and hijinks when you have time?
Of course. This is super fun. I got to learn stuff I never knew. There's one other fact that I never got to do a table read. I don't know why. Was that a purpose thing, Alan, or no?
We didn't generally have that many guest stars do table reads, so maybe it was just that. It's pretty simple, yeah, because I think it was an extra, I don't know, because I don't think like Rod ever did
for sure it was a cost thing. For sure, it was.
Cost thing. Morgan Sackett being like, no.
Harris always played John Ralphio is what I was
told. Harris played John Ralphio
at the table. I'd never been to a table read for Parks.
Wow.
And the first time I ever did any of the words was when the cameras were rolling, and that was it.
I didn't realize that.
I was one of them to record the West Wing table reads, which played like radio shows. They were like very, very serious, and like everybody brought their A game. And the Parks ones were the only other ones because they were as funny, sometimes funnier than the shows. And I just wish, how is that not like, I would buy that. I would download the table reads of that show
Yeah, we should have filmed them.
Ugh, it's amazing.
I never got to see it. I always wanted to.
In a
to.
Day when they monetize everything and squeeze every dollar out of everybody, the fact that no one's ever figured that out is a mind blower to me.
Oh, well. Anyway, this episode by MeUndies. MeUndies for squeezing a dollar out of anything.
All right, everybody. Thanks for coming to Pawnee Parks and Recollection. It's me, Rolo, signing off with Alan Yang. And wait, I think John Ralphio needs to sign off.
Robin Allen, Parks and Recollection.
There you go. Thank you to Ben Schwartz. That's so good.
It's good to talk to you guys.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on, Ben. Thank you so much. And thanks, Producer Schulte. Thanks to Greg. And goodbye for Pawnee.
Bye.
Parks and Recollection is produced by Greg Levine and me, Rob Schulte. Our coordinating producer is Lisa Berm. The podcast is executive produced by Alan Yang for Alan Yang Productions, Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Jeff Ross, Adam Sachs, and Joanna Solitaroff at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Stitcher. Gina Batista, Paula Davis, and Britt Kahn are our talent bookers. The theme song is by Mouse Rat, a.k.a. Mark Rivers, with additional tracks composed by John Danick. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Parks and Recollection.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.